Hi, this is Katie Day, and welcome to Creating Ripples, the programme that showcases inspirational women across the globe. Sometimes it is the small acts and achievements that can create the biggest ripples. We're here to share some amazing stories. They will make you laugh. Sometimes they may make you cry. They will always inspire you. Today, it is my absolute pleasure to be interviewing the truly fabulous, wonderful and stunningly beautiful Noreen McAsebe. Noreen, also known as the Motivational Listener, is a business growth coach and strategist to entrepreneurs who want to be more, earn more and make a difference doing what they love. She's the founder of the Radical Leap Company, a consultancy that helps business owners and leaders address key growth issues within their organisations and offers solutions to help increase performance, productivity and profits. She also offers private strategy consulting to small business owners and is currently a business advisor to the Côte d'Ivoire Chamber of Commerce in Great Britain. Noreen is a transformational public speaker who has had the opportunity to host and speak at numerous business conferences and events in Europe, East Africa and West Africa, as well on various digital platforms like video blogging, web training summits and radio. She has featured as a guest on radio channels like Voice of Africa Radio, Waking Passions Radio Show, The Kubi Springer Show, To Inspire Network Spotlight, Andrea Graham Radio Show, Kingdom Culture and the award-winning Ask Patricia Show. She has also been a contributor to online articles for Ariato PR, On in London Lifestyle Magazine, Your 24-Hour Coach, To Inspire Network, and the Women Empowering Women Magazine. Inspired by a passion for philanthropy, Noreen is the co-founder of Niazuri, I'm not sure if I've got that right, sorry Noreen if I got it wrong, Foundation in Ghana, and a strategic partner of the Foundation for International Collaboration in the UK, iSpace Foundation in Ghana, and Vision Africa in Kenya. Via her podcast, Reflections of Inspiration, Noreen shares thoughts and tips to help professionals win in life, at work, or in business. Welcome, Noreen. Thank you for being interviewed. We've known each other for a while now. And yes, we met in the most bizarre circumstances.
I remember that.
It was one of the more surreal evenings of our life, I think. But, you know, some things, we're both great believers, aren't we, in fate and destiny.
Yes.
And some things are just meant to happen. And it's almost as though we were puppets and our strings were being manipulated from somewhere up in the universe.
And that's what it felt like.
And we were just kind of put in the right position and then it was up to us what we did with it.
So I remember we bumped into each other and said, oh, sorry. Yeah. And then we had a conversation and now here we are, and three years later?
3 years. I think it is 3 years, isn't it? Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. And also I'm a great believer in timing.
Yes.
Because we discussed on London Underground, going back to our various stations to go home that weird Friday night. Very bizarre Friday night. Of all the plans that we had that we were going to do together, which actually 3 years are on and now finally beginning to take shape.
Materialize, yes. Yes.
So timing is everything.
Timing is everything, and I think relationship is everything.
It is.
Because I think we've built a good relationship to be able to, one, even get to this point where we can have this interview and to work on the projects that we're working on.
It's true. Do you find that is a theme that runs through with the people that you work with, that however much you can coach them or whatever information you can impart to them, if the timing isn't right, nothing will happen?
100%. I agree with that because I have worked with people who have great dreams. They need coaching. They say they want coaching. They have ideas for businesses they want to start up. And I never used to ask them questions to really delve into where they are in life. I just used to, you know, full steam ahead. Okay, let's get started. And down the line, they stopped because they were not ready in the first place. They were not ready emotionally, mentally, and the timing was really wrong. So I believe in timing, and I make sure that I make sure the timing feels right for both themselves and myself for the coaching relationship to really work.
How do you tackle somebody when you, with your experience and expertise, you're with someone and instinctively you know, and by the right questioning, that they're actually not ready, but they are absolutely determined that they are? How do you deal with that?
I have dealt with that, and in the past I have often listened to them, give them the opportunity to really share where they are at in their journey, and gently, because through questioning you find out there's certain key things that are happening that probably will get in the way of the coaching relationship or them actually taking action. So now what I do is I gently suggest.
Okay.
I make suggestions of probably a better time if they have to handle something specific, to go away and do an exercise maybe, or to really take time to think about their journey and to write things down. So I may not coach them one-on-one, but I will give them an exercise to do.
Okay.
For example, making a commitment promise. So get them to go through the commitment promise and really dig deep and think, do I really want to do this at this point? Can I commit this investment at this point?
Mm.
And more often than not, they're very honest. They come back and say, I've gone through it and thank you so much. I think I really need to take a step back, talk to my husband. I really need to talk to my kids before I start. So I'm very gentle with it without saying, no, I won't coach you. But I give them an exercise that will help them see for themselves that the timing might not be quite right.
That's key, isn't it? Because it's only once we take ownership of our decisions.
Yeah.
Are we actually going to follow through on them? And what I've noticed in the years I've been working with groups and one-on-one with people over the decades now, is that there's this inbuilt default behavior in human beings that the moment we're told to do something or not to do something, it's automatic to do the complete opposite.
Yes, so,
you know, as coaches, if we say to somebody, I really don't think you're ready, the natural human default reaction is, oh, really? You think?
What do you mean? Yes. What do you mean I'm not ready?
I think I am ready. So you're right. To actually, I mean, and that's part of the coaching journey, isn't it? To actually empower somebody to come to the decision that you believe is possibly the right decision for them. But they have to come to it.
They have to come to it. Because like you said, if you say no, and no is a very disempowering statement sometimes, I think. So I don't say no, we won't work together now. I'll just say, okay, take some time and go through this exercise, please. And then let's have a conversation after. And often they will talk themselves to the point where they make the decision that I would really like for them to make. And
yeah.
Say, okay, maybe not now, maybe in 2 months, I'll come back to you. And I will follow up with them to find out, how are you doing? Are you ready now? How do you feel? And if they make the decision that they wanted then they know that they owned that decision, and it's very empowering for them because they feel like they're in control of the process.
Absolutely.
Yes.
So where did this come from, this desire to work with people in the way that you do?
In high school.
Ah.
It goes way back to high school. I never knew there was an industry called coaching.
Right.
I think I found out about coaching when I was in my mid to late 20s. But in high school at 17, I used to have my classmates come to me and ask me questions.
Right.
And then sit around and say, oh, let's ask Noreen what she thinks. And for us, it was just a conversation. But when I look back in hindsight, there was a lot of coaching going on there. So they'd ask me questions about life, about their relationships. And I can't tell you, I was answering from a specific pot of knowledge or anything like that. But as time went on, I came to the UK when I was 17 after high school, and I went to university and I was reading information systems and management. I had no passion for that whatsoever. and I could not foresee myself sitting in front of a computer every day programming something. So I went through a season when my father passed away. I took time out from university to really think, do I really want to do this with my life? Because I was then thinking about time and how precious time is, because when you lose someone, you really think about time and what you want to do with your life. And so after that, I went in search of a career that would put me in front of people because I like people and I want to work with people. I tried customer services. I thought, this is not it. Mm-hmm. I did sales, retail. I said, no, it's not. This is not it yet. Mm-hmm. So I kept searching. And one day I stumbled on across a website that was advertising coaching. Mm-hmm. And as I read through it, I was like, oh, this sounds like it. This sounds like something that I want to do and it comes naturally. And I trained to become a coach and I haven't looked back since then.
Wow. It's fascinating, isn't it? I don't know if you've seen an advert on the television that's been around just recently. Like, I can remember the advert, but I can't remember what it's advertising, what it's actually selling. But it's with little children of varying ages, but all kind of under 10. Uh-huh. And looking at what they're doing and saying, you know, you're practicing for what you're going to do when you grow up. And look for the, you know, you can see a little girl dancing and then you see her as the adult and she's a ballerina. And you see another child climbing up something and then it goes into their adult life and they've become a mountaineer or something. But it's funny, isn't it? When you look back on childhood and when you speak to most people, eventually most people will stumble upon what that inner child told them they should be doing.
Yes.
But what can happen is that we end up, and what I find a lot, particularly when I'm working with people, is that quite often for the first half of our lives, we're fulfilling the expectations of other people, usually our parents and our teachers.
Yes.
And then something happens. You think, hang on a minute, whose life am I living? I don't think this one's mine. I'm not sure I painted that picture.
And it's better if it happens early rather than later.
Absolutely. And some people, it never happens.
And which is a sad thing.
Very sad, because people can die with their song still inside them, can't they?
Yes, it's painful. I remember speaking to a lady. She was in her 50s. I think she was transitioning from a job and she was moving back to a different country. She was moving back to Australia, I remember. New Zealand. And one day she woke up and she was crying because I was close to her at the time, and she woke up, she was crying, and I asked her what's wrong, and she said, I've come to this point in my life and I don't know what I've done with my life until now.
Wow.
I don't love my job. I don't even know why I'm doing this job. So we began to do some, as a friend, you're talking to her, but essentially I was coaching her. So
yeah.
And I was asking her this question about herself, her dreams, her life, and she said, I've never really had a dream for myself because I've always looked after my siblings, and now I've come to this point, my siblings have gone off, they have their families, they're doing what they love, and I don't know what I love. And that was really painful to listen to. Eventually, after about a year, she began to pursue new interests, and she woke up one day and she said, I'm going back home. I think I found what I want to do. I want to do deep sea diving and all of that stuff.
Wow.
So even though she discovered it that late, I could see how sad she was that she'd spent so many years doing something that she didn't really love.
Yeah. It's tragic, isn't it, of how many people get on the treadmill and get locked into fulfilling other people's expectations. And it can be really, really, because also I think we're quite tribal, so we want to fit in.
Yes.
And standing, so we want to be socially accepted. We want to, you know, if we please our parents and our teachers and our partners and look after our children, etc., we fit into the norm of what society expects of us.
Yes.
And to step out of that, to be that maverick and step out of that and think, what do I want to do, can be an incredibly challenging thing for people to face and to actually do, because it's easier to be taken along with the tide, isn't it? And just
it is. I think it takes courage.
It does.
It takes courage. I know for me personally, I was quite shy, even though I was saying that my friends used to come and sit down and say, well, let's ask Noreen, and I have like 10 people sitting around, we're having conversations and I'm giving out advice like I know everything, but but as I was quite shy as a child, so I tended to conform a lot to say my siblings were quite strong-willed, so I'd fit into what they say. And one day my father sat me down as I was 13, and my father liked dialogue, because even then I could see that he was a coach, quote unquote. He wasn't really a coach, but he used the style to really teach me life lessons. And he sat me down, I was 13, and he asked me, why did you go and do what your sisters did? So what they did, wasn't wrong, but he asked me, why were you in that group? Why were you there? I said, well, I wanted to do it. He said, did you really, really want to do it? And I remembered he dug deep because he was quite skilled at it. And he drilled down to the point that I said, no, I just wanted to be with them at that particular point in time. And I remember he said to me, you have to be willing to walk alone.
Wow.
You have to be willing to walk alone, even if no one wants to walk with you.
Wow.
Until today, it has driven everything that I do, even in business, because when I started coaching, and I started coaching during a period when nobody in my circle knew what coaching was, and it took people quite a long time in the UK, it was like, what is coaching anyway? What is life coaching? And they still didn't get it for quite a while. So when I said I was coaching, it was like, oh, why don't you just get a job in the bank? Why don't you just become a project manager? So I started this journey of setting up a coaching business, and I did walk alone for a long time. And I remembered what my father said, and I remembered it took me incredible strength to keep believing in myself when nobody did. And it was one day they woke up and said, oh, okay. Oh, you're still doing that coaching thing, are you? How is it going? And I'm like, oh, it's going okay. It's going. So now that it's materializing and it's more visible than it was before, they're like, oh, okay, you are really serious. You are really serious about that.
You really mean it then? You're going to do this?
So I'm glad that I stuck with it. But I do know, like you said, it takes courage to just defy, almost rebellion, let me call it. You have to rebel against the outer voices and believe in the inner voice that really talks to you and say, yeah, keep going, you're doing the right thing, believe in yourself, even though it looks like, oh my God, you know, it's not working. But yeah, it takes courage.
It does. And also, you know, our parents can make or break us. I mean, that statement from your father at 13, wow, what a powerful thing to say. Yeah. That was incredible.
It sits here every day. I remember it every day. Walk, even if you walk alone, just keep walking.
Just keep walking. Yeah. And it's so true. And if I think back to my father, he was a very belt and braces man. So, you know, he was hugely risk averse. And I'm the polar opposite. Probably too much the polar opposite. Yeah. So I really, really tried to conform.
Yeah.
And be, in inverted commas, normal and get a proper job.
Yeah. You know,
with a pension that was nice and safe. Oh, my Lord. I mean, that was just so not what I should be doing. But to give him a story, I remember when he was in the 70s.
Yeah.
And so he would have been 74.
Yeah.
And I thought, I cannot do this anymore. I have to go back to being self-employed because the stress levels are too high. And I can remember saying to him, and I can remember being terrified. I was, however old I was, my early 40s, of having this conversation with him. Of letting him down.
Oh, yes.
And him saying, okay, well, so what's, if it doesn't work, what's the worst that's going to happen? The worst that's going to happen is, and pardon my language, but I'm quoting my father, it will go tits up. Sorry, listeners, but that's what he said. And you lose your flat. Well, yeah, I've got a spare bedroom. You just move in here, won't you?
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, good on him in his 70s to actually recognise he had to let me go to be, finally, what I was meant to be in my early 40s.
Yes.
But, of course, a lot of people don't get that. They will still get that pushback from the people that they want to please.
Yes,
so
because and I think one of the things that I realised was when people are pushing back and trying to protect us, it's because they have their own fears.
Yeah.
And buying into those fears is the worst thing that we could do because I was actually literally analyzing this particular thing you've just talked about giving into people's people's opinions or buying into their ideas about how we should live our lives. And I realized I've been a rebel my whole life. And there was one particular lady, she's a friend, she's a good friend actually, but I remember she was giving me advice and it was very contrary to what I wanted to do. So I remember pushing her away and walking away from the friendship for a period of time. And it felt like a really drastic thing to do because I thought she was hurt. But I realized that I had to save my dream because what she was saying to me was going to literally squash my dream. But we're friends now again, and we spoke about it. And I was so glad that I had been bold enough to walk away, but also bold enough to confront the conversation when it was time and just say, that was your opinion. And if I had listened to you, I think we would both have failed because my dream would have just died there. And you'd have felt that you protected me as a friend. But essentially, I would have walked away from something that was important to me. So courage is so key.
It is. I mean, that word failure is really interesting, isn't it? The fear of the fear. What in your experience when you work with people is the dominating fear? Is it fear of failure or fear of success?
Interestingly, it's fear of success.
Yeah, it usually is, actually.
It's often fear of success. And what I chalked it down to, because I began to analyze, and majority of them, interestingly, is women who deal with this particular fear the most. Because I work with men, a majority of my clients are women, but I also work with men. And men are very strategic. I'm not saying they're better or anything, but men are very decisive and they move ahead very quickly. And they just think, okay, I've done it now. What do I do next? But I find that with women, for example, we have a little bit more fear. And it's always revolving around the fear of living up to a higher standard than we're used to. You know, having to commit to a higher standard, having to commit to doing what we said we're going to do consistently, and having to commit to, if I get this thing, will I lose this people?
Yes.
Because like you're saying again, it's fitting in.
Yeah.
My friends are all doing the same thing, but if I step out, they're not going to come with me.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go, but not too far.
Yeah.
I'm just going to stay close to them because then I don't want them to say, oh, who does she think she is? Or, you know, those are such big dreams. Why don't you just stay humble? Because women say the most interesting things to each other. So fear of success is by far one of the biggest challenges I find people face.
Yeah, me too. It is. It's a biggie, isn't it? A real biggie. And yes, it is about that we're going to lose the people close by to us.
Yeah.
So it's, I guess, also when you work with clients, is it about helping them to help the people around them through their change?
Yes.
Yeah.
Initially, honestly, I didn't even think that factored into the equation because when I trained as a coach, I was just really excited about coaching. Okay, let's get your dream going and this are the goals and, you know, accountability, how's it going? But what I realized as time went on and as I grew as a business person and as a coach, I realized that some of my clients were having challenges in their personal relationship.
Mm.
And when I began to really think about, okay, how do we overcome this challenge because this is a big problem, this person is saying something negative to them, I realized that, like myself, it was people trying to protect you, but it's based on their own fear. So one of the key things that I incorporated and now I do in my coaching is to get them to have conversations with the people most important to them, the people that change is going to impact. So if it's maybe their children, to get their buy-in, to get the buy-in of, okay, mommy is going to go on this journey, or daddy is going to go on this journey, and this is what we're going to go through together, the money, this is what's going to happen to our money, this is what's going to happen to my time, and this is what I call the commitment promise. And that is the first thing that I get clients to do, is to make the commitment promise. And until they've had conversations with their partners, I won't take the client on, because that change could eventually destroy the family. If the family doesn't buy into it.
Yeah. It's huge, isn't it? And I don't think people realize the magnitude of change and the impact. And this came home to me back in the late 1980s when I trained to do style.
Yeah.
And I was married at the time. And I can remember a comment that my husband made to me. He said, do you realize you could have a lot of angry husbands banging on your door saying, what have you done with my wife? I thought, okay, that's an interesting comment. What you've just told me is what you really feel about me doing this job.
Yes.
That you're threatened by me doing this job. And you're just projecting that out.
Yeah.
And I then realized that actually I had to position that with my clients and saying, actually, when, you know, it could be anything, we get a new haircut, lose a load of weight, whatever, but transform ourselves. We expect the people close to us to be really happy for us, and actually they can be the people who are really unhappy.
Yes, like, what are you doing?
Because we're pressing all of their buttons.
Yes.
and showing them what they could do, but maybe don't have the courage to do. So,
and maybe they're comfortable with us being just who we are.
Exactly.
Like, you're fine. What's wrong with, there's nothing wrong with your hair. I said, but I want you to try new things.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, but why? And no, this preparing people is so important.
I think
when I was younger, like I was saying, as a coach, I think I was also, one, let me say unaware. I was very unaware of how my process was affecting my friends.
Right.
And I remember sitting down with a friend and we had an honest conversation. She's a lovely lady. She sat me down and she says, okay, I know you're really busy and I know you're studying and you're working and you don't have time, but I'd really like to see you more often as a friend. And she was very honest, and I had to sit and think, okay, how do I honor my friendships by letting them know that I still care about them? And I learned to communicate better, because I wasn't very communicative. I was just like, okay, I'm off, and I'll see you in, 4 weeks? And I wasn't, in the space of 4 weeks, no phone calls, no emails, nothing.
Right.
And my friends are saying, I'd really like to see you. It just says, send a text message, at least. And I had to learn to communicate better.
Right.
And I had to learn to tell them, okay, I'm going to be doing this course and it's very hectic and I'm not going to be available, but I'll see you in 2 weeks. So preparing them for the process it's actually quite interesting, because as human beings, even especially as coaches, we have to be, one, self-aware, but also aware of how the other people are experiencing our lives and how we're impacting them. So I've built stronger friendships now. I've lost some along the way because they were just not interested. Like, okay, I'm out of here. I'm not interested in what you're going through. But I've kept some really valuable friendships, you know, and they've stayed with me. And when it's tough, they'll say, okay, we know it's tough right now and we'll give you time, but, you know, call us if you need us.
Yeah.
And that is valuable.
It is. Amazing. Yeah. So tell us more about the work you're doing in Africa.
Right, Africa is my heartbeat. Let me call it that. I was born and brought up in Kenya, and I migrated to the UK at the age of 17, and I've been here ever since then. I've worked, but I tend to go back to Africa, Kenya especially, because it's home. And what I really wanted to do was to make an impact with what I love to do, which is coaching. And obviously it's grown into consulting and training. So I wanted to do that, but I also wanted to incorporate an element of philanthropy, because that's what I really love to do. If I had all the money in the world, that's what I'd do full time.
Yeah.
Philanthropy. So I decided that I wanted to incorporate philanthropy and what I love to do. And it's taken me a while, but I think I found a good middle ground. And I'm partnered with foundations, organizations that are actually doing work in Africa, and I brought in my skill set of coaching, consulting and training, and partnered with them to empower young people and women in business to either start up or to grow their businesses or to go up the career ladder. So I'm working on a couple of exciting projects at the moment. One you know about, we're about to kickstart the Ivory Coast one.
Yeah. Training.
But the one that I'm really, one of them is based out in Ghana. It's based in Accra. And it's helping women, empowering women to grow their businesses and their careers through technology. And it's a 3-year project. It's funded by Comic Relief, and we're in the first phase of the project. And it's so fulfilling to see the women who are passionate, but just do not have the resources to fulfill their dreams. So we're offering training to them, and we're offering mentoring and partnering them with mentors based in the diaspora community, so mentors in the UK and the US, for example, and those mentors will work with them either to grow their businesses or to go up the career ladder. So that's really exciting.
Very exciting.
And the other one is based in Kenya. It's called Vision Africa. And for them, with a group of other professionals, we've raised £20,000.
Wow.
To build a special needs center, because that's really needed. So that the work in Africa for me is passion, really. It's
right.
Passion for what I do and for also changing lives. And I brought that together to hopefully make a difference.
So the project in Ghana, how many women over the 3 years will you be able to help?
So we want to, our target is to work with 200 women per year.
Per year?
Per year.
Okay.
But so far we're oversubscribed.
Wow.
Yes. So we've had to be creative in finding additional partners who have the capacity to help out.
Gosh.
So in the first month, I think we had about 100 children, because we're targeting young girls as well.
Okay.
So the teenagers have gone through the first phase. So there was about 100, and then now the second phase is working with women, you know, entrepreneurial training. So far we've had about 300 delegates sign up. And we see it growing because obviously the marketing is going out and more people are interested. And it, we've had to change the goalpost and aim for 1,000 women in three years.
Wow. So what's the criteria? How do you choose out of all the women who want to go through the program?
So every woman is interviewed. They go through an interview process. We have these three partners are based in Ghana. One of them is called Mobile Web Ghana, Ghana Code Club, and the iSpace Foundation. So they take the women through an interview process.
Right.
They vet them based on, one, their skill set and their ambitions and what they really need to know to be able to achieve their goal. So then they take them through training programs. So those who are not market ready, they take them through the basics of business. But those who are ready to set up their businesses and to grow their businesses, then they take them through the more intensive programs.
Right.
And taking them through the nitty-gritty of running a business, running a technology business, or going up the career ladder in technology. And then once those go through, then we choose the ones who are ready for mentoring.
Right.
And then we put them through the mentoring program. So the mentoring hasn't happened yet, but it's the next stage of this.
So is it only technology companies, or can it be any business?
No, it's any business, because technology pretty much touches every industry.
Okay.
So there's women who are really interested in technology. So they're just techies and they want to program and they want to create apps. There's room for them. But there's also women who are in fashion. They make clothes. They sell produce like vegetables, and we're teaching them how to use technology tools.
Right.
To grow their businesses. So whether it's marketing and PR technology, or whether it's software they can use to organize their business, say for example Excel, the basics, or Sage, or just the technology tools available to them that they can use to make their businesses run in a more efficient way and more profitable way.
Okay. Yeah. So how are you going to measure the success of this?
So one, the mentoring is going to be key, because the mentors will keep an eye on how they're doing.
Right.
But what we're doing is we have follow-ups built into the process, where we check in with them to measure, one, from the time they started, what their income levels were, how that has grown over a period of 3 months, 6 months to a year. We're also measuring, one, how their personal lives have changed, how their community has been impacted. So there is monitoring and evaluation processes that have been built in into the process. Some of them obviously have already started sharing their wins. They're feeling more enlightened, more empowered. They feel that they can do it. There's two women that are very inspiring. So far we have a 64-year-old woman.
Wow.
Yes.
How amazing.
A big one for us. It was like, I mean, as soon as she walked in the room and we saw the video, I was like, okay, this project just got more meaning for me.
Wow.
Because she's 64, she's a grandmother, and she's like, oh, I don't want to die ignorant. You know, I live in this century and I want to know what technology is around me. And, you know, amazing.
Fantastic.
And there's another woman who's very young. She has a child. She has no childcare. She has no childcare, but she brought her child to the class. She says, can I bring my child? So in the classroom in Ghana, they have created a space for the baby to sleep while her mother is working. And for us, that's really what this project is about. These barriers women face in really accomplishing their dreams, and we want to remove those.
I mean, it's incredible, but it sounds as though even 1,000 women is only going to scratch the surface.
Yes.
What happens in 3 years' time when the funding has gone?
Yeah.
And you're raising the expectations of women in Ghana?
Yeah.
And that's it. I mean, is it possible to get more funding and for this to be a permanent offering?
So when we have, and this was a question that came up when we were doing the interview with Comic Relief to get the funding,
right?
Is sustainability is a key word for us.
Yeah.
It if it wasn't sustainable, there was no need to embark on it. So right. Comic Relief have funded they've agreed to fund the 3-year project.
Right.
But then what we have to do as partners is to create a sustainable ecosystem. So for these women who are going through the technology and going through the training and learning to use technology, we are helping them, one, build their businesses and grow their businesses, but we're also building a team of women who can work, who can be outsourced to companies. So it's a lot of companies are now outsourcing to Africa.
Right.
And so we're building an ecosystem of a workforce of women who are willing to offer their services and their expertise to international companies for pay. That's okay. One way. We're also creating programs that at some point the women will be able to afford to pay for their own courses.
Okay.
And we're also offering the opportunity for them to give back because they've been given too. So we're offering them the opportunity to train other women. So right. We're training them to be the people who will train the next generation.
Okay.
The next generation. And Comic Relief, hopefully, you know, continue to fund different elements of the project as time goes by.
What about the Ghanaian government?
Well, the Ghanaian government is involved. So far, it's involved in the sense of offering one permission. But in terms of finances, it's not something that they're doing at the moment because there is no... I would say there's no resource for that particular project from them. And what we're wanting to do is to build the data to take right. to them and say, this is a viable thing to invest. Yeah. Look at what we've done in 3 years. We've got 1,000 women who are now working citizens, contributing to the economy of yeah. this country.
Yeah.
Can you support this going
yeah.
forward?
Yeah.
So once we have the data, then we have evidence.
Yes.
But if we go to them and say it's a dream, we really yeah. want to, they're not really interested. Yeah. I'm like, oh, great, good for you.
Yeah.
But if we have the numbers to say, look at 1,000 women.
Yeah.
And look at these women in different regions and they're all doing something to contribute. We really need you to step in now and put something in place for the next generation going forward.
So why Ghana?
Why Ghana? Ghana is like you spoke earlier about timing and about fate and yeah. destiny.
Yeah.
I woke up one day last year, backstory. I woke up one day last year and I wrote a list of countries that I wanted to work in.
Ah.
I wrote them on the wall. I was thinking, I was meditating and, you know, a thought came to me and said, why don't you, because I was thinking about cities. I was thinking about the UK. I was thinking about London, Leeds, just local. But a thought came to me, and I believe it was divine, and I wrote countries down on the wall. And the first country was Ghana, I wrote down. And the second country was Ivory Coast, which are both material.
Wow. Yes. Oh, my gosh.
So I have two more countries which are materializing slowly, and I can see them, but they're not here yet. So I have Rwanda and South Africa on the list.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, So for me, it is, I think what I wanted to do, as I did not want to limit myself to one African country because I'm Kenyan, because Africa is so big.
Yeah.
Africa has over 54 countries, and there's something that we can contribute to each of these. And I picked the ones that I felt drawn to.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once I put that down there, then all these opportunities are coming, you know.
Amazing.
Yeah, so...
So do you plan to do any more in Kenya? You've got the Vision Africa
yes.
in Kenya.
Yeah.
So tell us a bit more about that. You touched on it briefly, but yes. tell us a bit more about what's happening there.
So Vision Africa, I joined this philanthropy group. It's a
yeah.
group of professionals, and it's a giving with a different model. Because what we're used to is what is really popular is you give your money to a charity and then you just let it go.
Right.
But then with this particular giving model, it resonated with all of us. There's 8 professionals in a group and there's different groups across London. And what we each do is we contribute £1,000 to a project of our choosing. And we get a co-donor, high net worth co-donor, who matches our fund. So then we give the bulk of the fund to a charity. But what we do is we go through 8 charities because we each pick one. And we research each charity, and based on a criteria that we agree on as a group, sustainability, enterprise, women, young people, special needs. So we each go through something and we agree on a criteria, and we go through 8 of the charities. We research all of them and we pick the one that fits the criteria the most. And so we picked Vision Africa because it fits the criteria we wanted. They work with young women, they work with young people, and they meet special needs all at the same time. So it's right. Vision Africa is a charity that their motto is to give a child a future. And they start all the way from kindergarten age until they go off to college.
Right.
So they go with the child to the entire. So this particular project, we've raised funds for a special needs unit, which is desperately needed. And the beauty of this project is they don't just want the money, they also want our expertise.
Right.
So in the group, we have project managers, we have people who are experienced in funding, people experienced in technology, myself, training and development, learning and development. So we're all bringing our expertise in, and as well as giving the money, they're saying, work with us through the project and train our trainers and leave the knowledge with us so we don't have to keep coming back to people. And we love that.
Yeah.
We love it. So we're going to be working with them for at least a year. The funding has been dispatched to them. And they're going to report back and give us the stages of the building until it's got a roof on and it's open. And then the children and their parents can go through. It's a therapy center for special needs to really help the community understand special needs. Because in Africa, especially in Kenya and West Africa, special needs is seen as a bad omen and a curse.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
The families are ostracized. In some countries, the children are actually killed.
Good grief.
I know, yeah. But in Kenya, it's not that bad. So what we're trying to do is to get the community to understand what special needs is and to support them with the emotional tools to be able to handle the stigma and to help the community and to help the families integrate into the community really well.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big job because you're tackling a whole culture.
Yes, a whole society. Yes. So these mindset shifts, as well as the building the building and offering them the tools is just half of the battle.
Yeah.
The biggest battle is the societal, impact that, what people say about the children, about the parents, the schools, and other children are accepting the other children. It's a very exciting project.
And quite scary.
It is.
Because it's quite a responsibility, isn't it?
Yeah, but Vision Africa has the experience. So they have the manpower, they have the tools.
Yeah.
And we've come in as partners, essentially.
Right.
So we've offered funding and we're offering the operational expertise to help manage it really well.
Wow.
Yeah.
So where are you going to be, Noreen?
Yes.
In 5 years' time?
This question, I said, I don't know. Wherever life takes me, I'll go. From what I'm seeing right now, I think in the next 5 years, I'm going to be doing a little bit more work in Africa, and a lot more training, especially for charities and businesses as well. So I see myself doing exactly what I'm doing now, but on a bigger scale.
Okay.
And hopefully touching a little bit more lives than I am at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if I was to ask you the question that you ask your clients
okay, go ahead.
About timing.
Yes.
Is the timing right for you to commit to your goals and your dreams?
Yes.
And the people around you, do you have the support network around you that you need?
The timing is perfect. I think a lot of things have happened in my life to prepare me for this moment.
Ah.
So I've seen the build up. In hindsight, back then it didn't make sense because so many things were happening.
Yeah.
And you just think you're drowning. What's happening to my life? But then in hindsight, everything that has happened has prepared me for who I am right now. And it's given me the capacity to be able to take on international projects. Because it is stressful, different time zones and managing teams across continents, getting people to respond in time and making sure everything is done in a timely. So it has given me the capacity to be able to do that without being overwhelmed. So I know the timing is really, really perfect for me. In terms of support, I'm lucky because I have long-term friends who have given me the emotional support. But what I do need, and I've had to be honest, is I need to grow a team around me to right. handle the additional operational things that I can't really do all by myself. So I've got somebody who's helping me already with the operations. I've got an operations manager. I finally hired someone. I was willing to give somebody the reins and say, yes, I trust you, do it. That was hard.
Yeah.
But I've got somebody in, but I realize and I recognize that I need to continue to grow that. If I'm to reach more people, I need yeah. a support network that yeah. knows how to do the job and is willing to do the job. So in answer to both questions, yes and yes.
Okay.
Partly yes.
last question that I'm going to ask you. If you were to go back to your 10-year-old self, what one message would you give her? And if you were to go forward to your older, more mature self, what one message are you going to give her?
If I was to go back to my 10-year-old self, I would say to her, listen to yourself.
Mm.
Because okay. back then there were so many voices right. saying, oh, you're this, you should do this, you should do this, even at that age.
Yeah.
And I listened to them and it nearly shut me. You know, it closes your heart space.
Yeah.
But it almost did. And it took me a few years to open that heart space again. So I would say to her, just listen to yourself and right. believe that what you're feeling and thinking is right for you. If I was to go to my more mature self, I would say the same thing.
Mm.
I would say, listen to yourself, because after lessons I've learned until now, I've learned to honor that voice 100%.
Mm.
And it is honoring that voice that has got me to this point, and I can see how it's taking me further. So stay with that voice, stay with that inner voice. It's right. It's the divine guiding you. And that's what I believe 100%. So, and it's based on obviously what happens around all of us. A lot of things happen to shut that voice down.
Mm-hmm.
And people say things, or you see things, and you see all these negative things happening in the world, and it shuts people's heart space down.
Mm.
And for me, it's the same thing. Just listen to yourself and believe that inner voice.
That's a wonderful way to end, Noreen. Thank you so much. I knew it was going to be a joy, and it has been. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Thank you. I've really enjoyed speaking with you.
This has been Katie Day with Creating Ripples. Listen in and be part of the revolution that is rocking the world. Women are the new future. We are awesome, fearless, fabulous, inspiring, yes. passionate, courageous. In fact, yes. we just rock.
We rock.